Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
DJ
Tice.
John Rash, Star Tribune editorial board, Chad Hartman here from WCC Radio. Once again, our collaboration, Plain Politics. We got so much this week. Let's get to the latest here as we record this on Wednesday. Representative Ilhan Omar has responded to the president. All this goes back to the controversy which ensued over the weekend, where I called her out like many people did. I know the editorial board also has on what to me was an anti-Semitic comment. Some other comments by her. She eventually came up with an apology. I thought parts of the apology, I want to get John and DJ to comment on that too, was a little lacking for me when she said, basically, I had no idea on this one. I'm still learning. I'm sorry. As an individual who has faced the Muslim tropes and the Muslim stereotypes that she has, to act like she had never heard of a stereotype tied to Jewish citizens of our, of this country or Jews abroad, I didn't accept that myself. The president, who in my view shouldn't be lecturing anybody about belittling or bullying or comments insulting races and religions, called for her to resign. So Representative Omar today says, hi at Real Donald Trump. You have trafficked in hate your whole life against Jews, Muslims, indigenous. I don't know what's happening. Immigrants, black people, more. I have learned from people impacted by my words. When will you? All right. On the whole thing, DJ, where do you want to jump in?
Well, I find myself as the discussion has developed with somewhat mixed feelings on this. I mean, clearly Representative Omar has got to learn how to do business in Washington. Mm-hmm. And how to be effective there. You know, there are many different views of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and America's relationship with Israel.
And it's fair to have a debate on that, too.
Absolutely. Perfectly fine. But, you know, she hasn't been elected to Congress to represent the Gaza Strip. She's been elected to represent the 5th District of Minnesota, and people have a variety of views on these issues. And if she is going to be effective in that representation, you know, she needs to learn, you know, where the landmines are, so to speak, in Washington. And she certainly has not shown that she does understand that. So let's hope she's learning some of that. All that said, I must say I'm getting more and more concerned about our sort of politics by taboo. You know, in which we don't discuss the substance of issues. We just say, oh, you're anti-Semitic. Oh, you're Islamophobic. You're sexist. You're racist. You're whatever. Some kind of ism. And I actually saw a piece come into the paper today saying that, you know, charges of anti-Semitism against Omar are just Islamophobia. So now we've got sort of the dueling taboos.
The backlash, right?
I mean, what's worse? Who's, you know, more anti-Semitic, Islamophobic? And I'm sure there's a gendered stuff in there and all kinds of it. And I just get a little weary of it.
Yep.
I do think I hear people talk about Congress being bought and paid for, you know, by the NRA, unions, by corporations, all the rest. I hear it every day. And people don't get called out in this way. But I guess if you say that of the Israeli lobby, suddenly, you know, you stepped on a taboo. She's got to learn.
But is some of that because of her previous tweets in this area?
Of course. Right. And that's part of the trouble. She hasn't learned that, you know, she has some fences to mend and you know, some credibility to build. She needs to work on all of that. But having said that, I do think some of the sort of instantaneous labeling of certain kinds of debate is really stifling any kind of meaningful discussion of issues in the country.
John?
I concur with Doug in many ways in that there are really serious and serial issues that this country needs to address from a very fundamental perspective, and lawmakers have a responsibility and a privilege to do so. And so the need to talk about our relationship with our forever friend and ally Israel and its relationship with its Gazan and West Bank neighbors is something that's not only important but imperative. But it's the method in which she, and in a broader sense, so many in the public eye go about this that becomes so troublesome. So instead of coming to Congress and trying to learn and trying to partner with people across the aisle and people within her party who might share a different perspective, hold some hearings, maybe have a fact-finding mission, really see the conditions that are happening in the Gaza Strip mm-hmm. and elsewhere, as well as some of the very legitimate Israeli security concerns, and to contend with those, it's done via Twitter. And that is the antithesis of serious lawmaking and got her in serious trouble in terms of how she went about this entire process. And so, you know, I think that she and so many, all the way up to the commander-in-chief, would be so much better served if they stayed off of social media and engaged in social dialogue with their colleagues and with the American people about these issues.
But as you know, and as both of you know, that's not going to happen, right? Because people look at the power of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez right now, right? She is the number one Democrat right now. Doug, I'll go to you here.
Yeah.
And shaping the agenda. She's not the most powerful, but she is the one who's causing the greatest reaction. And a lot of that is driven by her skills with social media. Yeah. The president is not the president without social media. So they might feel like, listen, we might step into it occasionally. We might hurt ourselves with some others, but with our base, whether it's Representative Omar, President Trump, and others, there seemingly aren't the implications of missing out on what John is saying, the broader, deeper conversation where actual change can take place.
Yeah, you do seem to be able to get away with quite a lot. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has put out the Green New Deal FAQ, which they've since explained was something, if it was fake or it was a mistake or it was preliminary or something. But it was
what they put out there deserves scorn. I mean, people are going to get paid even if they don't want to work.
One would like to believe that it's fake, but it certainly reflects something, and there's a lot of goofy stuff in there.
I think, if it wasn't fake, and to me, I'm not sure it was fake, I think they escaped from criticism, and I think the criticism would have been very just for more people.
It's exactly what I'm saying. You can put this stuff out there. You can charm the people who are charmed by it.
Yeah.
And then just deny it.
Right.
That it was real, and move on. Move on to the next tweet storm.
Right.
Omar has, I haven't looked lately, but it's more than 500,000 followers.
Yeah.
It's
an amazing story.
Twitter. So it's pretty hard to resist, that kind of megaphone.
And pertinent to the point both of you gentlemen are talking about right now, she may indeed have that megaphone and that popularity, but in terms of power, she is not among the very few who are deciding the deal that President Trump grudgingly seems to be accepting regarding the border wall and some of the funding that led to a partial government shutdown. And those Democrats who have looked towards AOC and said, I want to get on board without knowing all the details, or if those FAQs, if those frequently asked questions are actually real or not, and having delved deeply, as we speak right now, the cable news networks are flashing that Senate Majority Leader McConnell is going to hold a vote on this because he wants to have every senator to have the opportunity to go on the record.
Isn't it funny?
Abolishing air travel in North America.
And to basically look and whether retrofitting or building anew every building. But it's kind of funny just picking up on that, John. How many bills are there out there? In this case, Mitch McConnell, but it's happened with other majority leaders. Let's be very clear about that. Where it looks like the votes might be there, but it doesn't work for the party. Clearly, there's no chance the votes are in the Senate for this, but they want to get all the 2020 candidates on the record. And so they can say, these folks are so out of the mainstream. Do you really want to consider them to lead our country?
We can think just about issues that we've talked about here on Playing Politics in terms of protecting the Mueller investigation. They could probably muster a Senate majority to be able to guarantee that that would happen. Senator McConnell has not allowed that vote.
Yep.
In terms of a broader immigration deal, there are rational Republicans and Democrats who not only can but have sat in the room and figured out a way that they think that they can make this work over a period of a number of years. That has not come to a vote either. And so, you know, I think that you're very right that it turns in both directions. And here Senator McConnell wants to get not only every senator, but in particular presidential prospects mm-hmm. from the United States Senate who have announced their candidacy, and he wants to get them on the record whether they are on board with the Green New Deal.
This is why it's great to be the majority leader, because you do get to decide what comes to the floor.
Yeah.
And sure, I mean, every one of those presidential hopefuls seeking the nomination where the party's, you know, most militant base
yep.
is very powerful, you can hardly vote against this thing. Maybe they'll have to figure out how to abstain or something.
Yep.
On the other hand, whatever they do other than denouncing it is going to come back to haunt whoever gets that nomination later on, because the Republicans are going to remind people that, you know, they voted to abolish cows and this kind of thing.
I've always thought cows were the major problem in this country. Once we get rid of them, we'll resolve
Reagan,
everything.
I think, explained that.
Yes, he did. Well, so Senator Klobuchar, well, obviously is in the news, right, for the announcement and the stories and the interviews. She was a part of a Fox interview last night, John, and it was, well, this is aspirational. And when we get down to actually the practicality of voting on it, we might have to look at the details. Again, that's where Senator Klobuchar is trying to cleave out her spot in all this. That, yup, in the truest purpose, I am with all of you. But I also get practical, realistic politics. But just picking up on what Doug said, I don't know how that's going to play with the Democrats now in 2019 and 2020, because right now it is just a race to the left outside a couple people, and she's one not exactly running from the left, but certainly not embracing all their ideas.
Well, indeed, you're quite right. And the activists favor, well, activism at this point, and they the energy is towards the left portion of the party, and that's even without Senator Sanders jumping into the race and,
yep.
you know, trying to reprise the remarkable run that he had in 2016. She, as you mentioned, is trying to carve out that sensible centrist lane. That might not work with the party stalwarts, but I would argue that with everyday Americans, that's more how they would perceive themselves. And when pollsters ask them to self-identify, they're much more centrist in these issues. And so she's trying to thread the needle in terms of saying, not only do I acknowledge, but I'm quite concerned about climate change and some of these other issues, but we have to perhaps take a more pragmatic approach to trying to solve them. So what will be interesting is to see Senators Harris and Gillibrand and others who seemingly have jumped on this quite early, and the whole issue of Medicare for all. And there's mm-hmm. many differences of gradation, of course, between being quite concerned that every American has some kind of health insurance coverage, trying to shore up the Affordable Care Act, and being for Medicare for all.
Yep.
And they're going to try and put them on the record for that as well.
You know, I think there's a question starting to surface whether AOC and, you know, the movement that she spearheads are kind of leading the Democrats, you know, down the rabbit hole that Donald Trump led the GOP, where you can't afford to offend these highly energized
yes.
voters who are behind this person, but you don't really want to go where they're taking the party. And the Republicans did not figure it out,
mm-mm.
and I'm not at all sure that the Democrats will either.
I think that's a great point. So that brings me, Doug, to Howard Schultz, right? Howard Schultz was given another platform by CNN. And he spoke out, and he was pretty critical of some of these ideas. He talked about the Green Deal and said, what are you going to add, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 trillion? Where is it going to stop? Clearly that many people within the Democratic Party are mad at him because they feel like he'll be the spoiler. He's going to face a lot of questions about Starbucks. He faced it last night, too, about will he give up all his shares? But if you're Schultz, don't you want to see more of this right now? Don't you want to see? He's got to be thinking, give Ocasio-Cortez and give the others who were elected or have been in Congress for a while and are taking the party further left, If I'm Howard Schultz, who, by the way, is a lifelong Democrat but is trying to run as the center middle, I think he's saying keep interviewing him. Keep raising their platform to give him a greater chance.
Well, I think that's probably right. He doesn't want to emphasize that everybody's in the middle. He wants to be the middle.
Yeah.
In contrast to the fringe dominated major parties, and you know he's got a shot at that. I don't know that he has much of a shot of becoming president, but presumably he wants to, you know, get a more sensible approach to issues out there. That's part of his motive, and no doubt it's fun to get all this attention and to you know, become an oracle of this kind. And I think the way things are lining up, he will have that opportunity if he wants it.
John, before you jump in, I'll just add also that Mike Bloomberg's people in the last 24 hours have said, well, we're in for $500 million. That's just our opening bid, by the way. And either that's going to be for him at the start or for Democrats. And did you see the quotes? It's like, well, look at how much Mike spent in his last election to be once again the mayor of New York. That was $100 million. And talked about this, just like hinting that he could be in for billions and billions in his candidacy.
I was just going to jump in with that very point. The person that perhaps benefits the most from what Howard Schultz is doing is Michael Bloomberg for two specific reasons. He has indicated that while he considered an independent bid in 2016, he thought that that would guarantee what eventually did happen, which was the election of President Donald Trump. And so he declined to do that and said if he runs, he's going to run as a Democrat in the whole Democratic caucus and primary system, and that he also has a governing track record that is, by any observation, significantly successful in New York.
Yep.
Things went very, very well mm-hmm. while he was mayor of that city. And so, you know, I think that as he looks at this and as he looks at the lane that Howard Schultz is trying to carve out, he can come in without Democrats being upset with him because he's running within their system.
Right.
And not saying, I'm not just another wealthy business person like President Trump, like Howard Schultz, who's dabbling into politics here. I've actually run for something and run it well. And so that'll be a candidacy to watch, especially with those deep pockets that you reference.
Well, I think it's true. There's a lot of running room down the middle. That is clear. And you know, Klobuchar is trying for that lane, but
Biden, if he jumps in, would be a part of that lane.
Of course, he would. You know, but Bloomberg has got something to bring to the party, as John suggests, including simply a name that is a household word, and that's something that Amy will have to build over a long period of time.
John, we have some reports as we talk right now saying that the president will sign the compromise bill on immigration. Again, as we talk right now, Sarah Sanders is kind of going back to Nancy Pelosi and tweaking her on her comments about Obamacare and saying, we're going to be different. We're going to read the bill first before we sign on board. It does seem like most people expect the president to sign this, but then look at other large sums of money available to him and whether he can do it on his own, whether he can do it within a national emergency, that's how he's going to try to do both. He's going to say, no shutdown, but by the way, my base, don't worry. I'm going to give you even more than $5.7 billion. How is this going to play out?
With his base, it may play okay depending on where he takes the money from. Meaning, I think that the average American, if you explain that he's going to take them from disaster relief funds from Puerto Rico or wildfires in California, they are going to overwhelmingly disapprove of that. Among his base, that may not be as big a concern as they see the southern border at this point. But I think that politically it's important to note that, you know, his base, by all poll results since he's taken the oath of office, has not expanded. It's contracted, and it wasn't a majority last time.
Yep.
In fact, he, as we all well know, lost the popular vote from that perspective. So, you know, it may get some of his base off his back, and including two key constituents, Sean Hannity, you know, and Ann Coulter, and some of the conservative commentary.
The coal presidents, you're talking about?
Yes, who have really maybe led him into this blind alley that he ended up in there. But it won't necessarily expand his level of popular support.
My guess is that he needs to politically and will, you know, continue to agitate on this issue one way or another. I doubt, though, that he would take some of those more controversial measures and want to, you know, continue to have them in front and center in the news for a real long time. I simply think saying that he's considering these things and mm-hmm. look at all these things probably satisfies his his base. Meanwhile, you know, the Democrats said they'd never give him any kind of well, no way, no how.
Yeah. Not a dollar, Nancy Pelosi.
And they are giving him one. And I think that, for him, is a pretty big victory.
The last thing I'd say, though, and he at one point had a deal for John for $25 billion with the Dreamers. Then it was, it's moved down and down and down. If you're the art of the deal guy, to then get $1.375 from $25 billion, that doesn't seem like the art of the deal to me.
And you mentioned the Dreamers. You also have people under temporary protected status.
Yep.
Their status of all these individuals who have woven themselves so successfully into the mosaic of America remains unresolved. This is still going to be a very significant issue that the leaders of this country, regardless of party and partisan perspective, are going to have to and deal with it.
You know, I'll just momentarily be the true cynic on this. I don't think Trump ever really cared about the wall. For that matter, I don't think the Democrats really care that much about the wall. This has been about the politics and about the symbolism of it. And in that sense, both of them win a little, lose a little, which is the way it usually goes. But the country's been, you know, put through the ringer for, and in substantive terms, nothing.
Promises made, promises kept. That's all about 2020. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great stuff from John Rash and DJ Tice, this partnership between WCCO Radio and the Star Tribune.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.